Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, from the National Black Unity News. Welcome to our podcast, our Monday night podcast. We also want to welcome those who are on Blog Talk Radio, also those who are on Facebook Live, and for those who are in our panel, what I call in the house, on our Zoom call. And I think we have Mr. Vernon Streeters with us, Mr. Walter Eugene Dempsey Murphy, Brother Satari, and David Murphy himself. But before we get into our subject matter and while we waited for maybe some of our panel or guests come in, we like to always start our podcast with a positive note. And Brother Satari, you have something for us, sir.
Yes, I do. We always do is we like to open up this podcast with readings from Daily Motivations for African American Success, written by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, a blueprint for eliminating poverty in our families. The reading for the day goes like this. Prime time. Time is never found again. And that's from the great jazz musician Thelonious Monk. James H. Johnson, founder and president of Johnson Publishing, once remarked that he regarded every hour of his time worth $1,000. The man who won't keep his appointments, Johnson said, generally won't keep his word. Time is money. We tend to waste what we value too lightly. Though it has been said often, every successful person knows that time is a valuable commodity. It can be invested or spent unwisely. Time is your greatest asset. As the old folks used to say, lost time is never found again. Don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today. It is the one commodity that is completely non-refundable, sensible, and irrefutable and irreplaceable. Once it's gone, it's lost forever. But you can change time into any form or riches you so choose. If you want to live a well-balanced, successful life, you should recognize the need for a systematic schedule by which to direct your time towards ends that will ensure success. One, take time for work. It is the price for success. Take time to think. It's the source of power. Take time to play. It's the secret of youth. Take time to read. It's the foundation of wisdom. Take time to make a friend. It's the road to happiness. Take time to dream. It's the way to reach the stars. Take time to love. It's the highest joy of life. Take time to laugh. It's the music of the soul. Winners value their time. Today, I will take time to do all the things that truly matter in my life. And it's important that we do recognize, as the old folks said, time waits for no one, and don't put off to tomorrow what you can get done today. And it's a good example of that. And they're doing these people's taxes and had a choice to put off getting some stuff done tomorrow, but I went on and knocked it out today, and I feel much better. I can start being asleep better tonight. So it's important that we take our time and use our time wisely. With that said, David, back to you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Powerful information that you shared.
You are
that,
muted.
And, you know, speaking of time, you know, Brother Satari hit the nail with the hammer right on the head. One of my things is time, using time effectively. And it seemed like, I don't know about the rest of you, but at my age, I'm very grateful to have things to do. But sometimes in my lifestyle, it seems like it's not enough time in the day to accomplish the things that I want to do. But also, Brother Satari reminded me, and I also understand this as well, that we have to be very good stewards of time. And we also must learn to use time wisely. And it's good to put in the work, like some of the young folks say. But it's also good to spend time with your family, your loved ones. It's also time to spend with those of you who believe with God and whoever you choose to be your higher power, and also take time for yourself, for the things that you want to do. In other words, what I'm saying, you need to have time to have a balanced life. And if you do that, you'll be a well-rounded person. And Brother Sataba, I appreciate that in opening. But you know, today I had a whole agenda to do, but I was reminded by my son saying that I have to go. He suggested that I go and have what they call a tux fitting. You see, he's getting married in June. And I wasn't fully aware of the fact that, of course, I was going to be in attendance, but I didn't know that I had to get a tux, too. So we went out there today and to do that. But the time, that little time that I spent with my son today was so valuable to me because, like I say, there's people today who are in mourning over their sons and their children and their family and their loved ones. And so, you know, we must cherish the time that we have not only with each other and be respectful of their time, but, you know, spend quality time, you know, and it's not how much time you spend, just the quality of the time. And I also want to have to give a shout out to my mother, whose birthday is today. And I spent a little time on the phone with her today. And that is truly an honor and a privilege to still, at my age, still have their mother around. And so, you know, I'm a blessed man, and I have no shame in my game about that. You know, God has truly blessed me in so many different ways. But I want to talk today, I was inspired today, about another thing that's been on my heart for some time now. And and since we started on a positive note, but you know, the truth will make us free sometimes. Some things we need to have a discussion about, not only have a discussion about, but do something about this. And that's our women, our black melanated princes, queens, our ladies. See, those of us who've been around the block once or twice, you know, certain things we didn't allow to happen to our family members, to our community. We wouldn't let people come in and run ransack over our community, harming one another, harming us in any kind of way. The men would stand up, even the young men would stand up against any folks on outside forces that came in. But today, and I know it was a process that got us this way, but today, especially I'm speaking to some of you gentlemen that's on the call right now, and I can't think of no other people that I'm aware of, that I am aware of, would allow people from the outside source to come in there and kill your children, abuse your children and your family members, disrespect our women, and do nothing about it. This past Saturday, you know, this is what really touched my heart. This past Saturday, if you don't know, you probably heard it in the news. There's a young lady in Baltimore City who was our former state's attorney by the name of Marilyn Mosby. Now, I'm also a founding member of this group called Black Men Unifying Black Men, and we host a breakfast every first Saturday of the month. And we just happen to have Marilyn Mosby as one of our guest speakers because this young lady just been convicted of a few, I ain't going to say crimes, because what she's being charged with, you know, and truly on the law, that's where, to my understanding, are not really crimes. You know, it's a little, not filling out a statement, but not to the time, you know, to the point to be persecuted. And so yes, but in any case, let me do this because people speaking, but in any case, you can hear things on the media, and I do know how media works. I do know, especially how they portray us. I do know that they spin it to their point of view. That's the power of media, but also hearsay. You know, people are always talking about this and they're always talking about that. But sometimes you need to go to the source to find out for yourself. And it was an opportunity for Marilyn Mosby to speak to black men. And I'm going to tell you something. That was very heart-wrenching for me. I mean, I felt real low. And I'm going to tell you why. You see, I watch the news too, and I know the reason. I believe I know the reason why this woman is being persecuted. My belief is that because she stood up when y'all probably heard of this guy named Freddie Gray in Baltimore, and they had a riot or uprising, as some may say, and she was bold enough to persecute those police, because that young man, Freddie Gray, died in the hands of 5 or 6 police officers. And she has enough gut and fortitude to stand up against that and brought charges against these police officers. Each one of them went away free through our court system. And since then, the fraternity of police officers and so many others has been put her on their hit list, because she went up against a powerful system. And to this day, and she's been, I mean, countless of hours, you know, being dragged to the mud in media, you know, appealing to public, to the public about this, about her family and this, that. Now, she stood in front of black men this past Saturday and told her story. We heard it from her mouth, why they're persecuted. And she said she's all right with being persecuted. She understands that she's a sacrificial lamb. She understands why she is being persecuted. And she says she made peace with God about that. There's many people that went down before her. Like I mentioned to a young lady who's on the call right now, Ms. Cheryl Ricks, I was telling her that, you know, we had a lot of martyrs and people lay down their life for the cause. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and so many of us. But she's still around, and she understands that this is one of the reasons why they're doing this to her. And but she also told another part that because of this situation, here she was a powerful woman at one time, doing quite well for herself. Now she's down to, she don't even own a car now. She lost her home. Her marriage is now, she's divorced now. She's using a public defender as her attorney. She has spent all of her savings and everything else for trying to defend herself. She is, you know, she's going through an extremely rough time. And not only after they did all that to her, now they're talking about stripping her of a law license. They already made her surrender her passport. And she has 2 little girls that she's trying to raise. Many witnesses stood up and said that she, you know, she would try to do everything by the books, even with her husband. They even had proof, but the judge wouldn't allow certain things to go, you know, be presented in court. The guy who actually encouraged her to even sign the paper, which is supposed to be a slap on the wrist, a $50 fine if anybody else would have gotten that charge. But yet they throwing the full book of the law, even trumped up charge. But no, whether she's guilty or not, is this. When she told her story, and I watched this in real time because the first trial, they show the news every day, 3 or 4 times a day. And I see her just walking with an attorney. I don't see none of her supporters or family members or anything else walk just by herself and the attorney. I said, what's going on? You know, maybe the cam just focused. That's what I was thinking, just focusing on her. And then she got found guilty of that. And then the second time around, that first time she had, you know, some kind of high-grade attorney. Now they are gone. Her second trial around, they can say she had the state's attorney. Public defender. But, you know, in the camera, this show, man, there was nobody there. She was going through the thing by herself. All them people, when she was a state's attorney, she gave all the top name ministers and politicians. All of them was gathered around when the lights were shining, the cameras were flaring, and they was right there photo shooting with her. But in her time of need, not one of them was there. And I got my partner, most of you know, Bill Gooden. Bill saw, because Bill is one of those type people who is a street soldier. He a protest if he had to do it by himself. You know, that's just his nature. You know, he's out there on the front lines. And Bill put together. He even called me up and we, you know, explained, you know, it's a shame why this lady's standing by herself. So they start organizing, and then a group of the men start going to her trial. And next thing you know, they start renting buses, taking bus loads of people to her trial. Marilyn said herself, she said when she looked around in the courtroom and saw no one there, she said she was crushed. You know, just constantly crushed, because she, you know, she just felt she was by herself. But then she said, and one day at a trial, she looked in there, was three black men there. It lifted her spirits. The next thing you know, there was a bunch of black men and women there. And she said it did her heart so good just to know that somebody cared enough to stand with her. And this, I'm watching this woman in real time speaking about this. And she was open and honest. And, you know, and so she even showed some, you know, films, you know, film clip that she's about to release and for her defense. But the point I'm trying to make and the reason I wanted to have this discussion tonight is this. From my perspective and many others, she's being publicly lynched, being destroyed in real time, all because she stood up and was doing her job. That's my opinion and the opinion of many others too. Whether you like her or not, whether you think she's guilty or not, nobody should go through something like that by themselves. And no one stands with, and especially we, us black men. Because if it was somebody else, first of all, they would have never been to trial. If it's somebody from another persuasion, then I can almost guarantee you that would never even made even the news pretty much. But because of her situation, she's been dragged up. And the reason why they did it, because they know that we as the black community don't stand up for too much anything. Somebody get killed, yes, we react to it and we want to protest and carry signs around. But they know that system now. They know that you'd be upset for a week or two and you're back to normal until they do another situation come up. But ladies and gentlemen, let me just say this to you. What I witnessed Saturday morning is what I've been witnessing for a long time. This has just not happened to her. But, you know, it can happen to any one of us. She was just publicly lynched. But there's thousands of our people who are going through the same kind of stuff. People locking our children up for any kind of trumped up charges. I done heard so many heartbreaking stories of people. And then we heard public things of when police breaking into people, shooting people. And it's, you know, we've seen it all, heard it all. But not too much is being done. And these people walk away after being, you know, after killing people and get off. Not only do they get off, they be rewarded with all kinds of funds that people send in from all over the country. Reward these people who actually went out and killed somebody. Just think of the time when Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin. That guy got almost $500,000 in defense funds for killing a young black man. And the parents almost had to scrape pennies together to bury their son. See, this is the kind of atrocities that they do and get away with, and we do nothing. There was a time when we were standing up. And we asked, where was the NAACP? Where was all these black women? Where was all our ministers at? And when the going is good, yes, they're in the spotlight. But when it's going to get tough, you know, everybody runs to their little corners. So, ladies and gentlemen, we need to have this conversation. I had a conversation with my sister on here right now, Cheryl Ricks. She runs a sister circle. And I was explaining to her today, you know, what I just explained to you, what was happening to this woman. See, it's not just a Marilyn Mosby. It's a lot of black women out there who have to go it alone, who struggle by themselves, right in the midst of men. And nobody turns the head to help. And we're supposed to be our brother's keepers. But, you know, we have to be conscious enough because by the grace of God, there go I or you. These same things that happened to her can actually happen to you and your family. Now, maybe some of you, it has happened to you. But I'm not even suggesting that you go out there, pick up arms trying to fight this. But, you know, there's many ways to combat unfairness, injustice on any type of front. And I, for one, you know, I told Marilyn Mosby that I would help her the best way I know how. And one of the best way I know how is through mass media. And another thing upsetting me that's past Saturday, too, was that a lot of the black men in that room was talking about how unfair Fox News treated her. One guy even calculated the time that Fox News spent on her. They said she was the number one, had more time than anybody in the last 2 years, anybody. They put more time on her than anybody else. And they want to send letters to Fox News. They want to protest against Fox News. But see, people don't understand Fox News doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. That's their format. That's what they do. That's why they do it. And you're going to run back to them to beg them to stop doing what they already has been doing. But see, that was too much of a problem with me. But the problem was with me was they complaining about an outside media when I'm sitting right there in the room. I had two or three of my supporters there that, you know, support the publication. But the large part was most of these men running organizations and stuff like that, they don't even support the black media that they do have. And see, you know, we had to stop that old crazy type of thinking, trying to do things like we did 20, 50 years ago when protesting. But then we had an arm. We had everybody on board. We had our ministers. We had everybody on board. But today, as we've seen through mass media, mass murders and public murders and everything else, these people are going to continue to do what they do. It's time for us to start doing what we need to do. We done heard the same scenario. Nobody comes back to save us. But you know we have enough power, enough strength to sustain ourselves. And we have to stop looking for outside those who caused the problem to fix it for us. And so I'm ready to open up this call because our children, our women, our black men are under attack on so many different fronts. And I'm so glad my brother Fred, Reverend Fred Shaw, is online. And I see Reverend Marvin Underwood. I want you to meet this brother because Marvin Underwood is going to start. He's starting a men's ministry where he's going to bring black men from all over the nation together. And then we have Dr. Leroy McKenzie on there, who's also associated with three or four men's groups. And as I just mentioned to you before, I belong to a group called Black Men Unifying Black Men. I also belong to one of the oldest men's club, Black Men's Club in the entire nation. They are a social club. And then I also sit on the board of the National Council of Black Elders, as well as the Maryland Council of Black Elders. And one of the main things we're worried about is our children and our future generation. If we don't do something today while we're still around, not too much going to get done. But because I do have some of these brothers who are actually involved in some of these men organizations, I'll start with the newcomer on the block, Reverend Marvin Underwood. I want you to unmute yourself because it's important to share how God is raising people up, men up, to stand in the gap for our ladies, for our families, and everything else. Now, you know, Brother Marv, you know, you and I, kind of, we grew up in the same neighborhood. Our families know one another, so we like family. Mm-hmm. And we've seen some ups and downs, the in and out. We saw deaths and everything around us. Mm-hmm. And you've been through the mill just like I have, but we're still standing.
Yeah.
And you and I had a powerful conversation these last, you know, this last week or so. And Reverend Marvin Underwood, like I say, is starting a men's ministry. And I want to ask you why, sir. Why are you chosen to do this?
Well, first and foremost, thank you, my brother David. I do appreciate you, man. You know that. And I want to say good evening to all of my brothers and sisters who may be on the podcast on this evening. God put it in my heart some time ago that men actually can be the solution and the answers to all the ills of our society. And that's based upon the mandate that has come from God for men from the very beginning of time. And so what God decided to do in this mandate for men was he needed men to be the priests, the providers, and the protectors of our families. Now, when you talk about families, of course, you want to start with your immediate family, your wife, your children, your extended family. Then you want to branch out into your neighborhoods, your communities, your cities, and then the states, and then the country. So what I'm really trying to say is that this mandate that God has for men to be the priests, the protectors and the providers for our families, we can take care of a lot of these ills in society if men was to take their rightful place. Now, understanding that that's not a blanket accusation or a negative against all men, but I do believe that once we educate men on their proper place, once we help men to understand where we come from as a people, we come from kings. We come from a powerful culture that go way back in the beginning of time. And that's a story for another time, as far as the Hebrew Israelites, et cetera, and those things that are contained in the Bible. But I want to say this real quick, because you know, David, you know I can talk about this whole men issue for all night long. But I want to say this before I conclude what little bit I choose to say, given the opportunity that you've given me, is that once we understand that we need to stand up, particularly for our families and communities, nobody else is going to do it for us. And the unfortunate part for me is that not just my brothers, but also our culture, we really don't understand how powerful we are. You mentioned that earlier. We have economic power. We have spiritual power. We have all of these things, and we have power, but it's underutilized. And then so when we look at the overall aspect of what's happening, I truly believe, and like you say, the conversation that we have had, I truly believe that if men was in their proper place, that we could have better families. We learn how to take care of our wives, stand up for the sisters. I'm speaking in general, of course, stand up for the sisters in our society. Well, you gave the classic example of Sister Mosby. We need to start to do that, and then we can begin to see some changes, because the truth of the matter is, as you say, those other systems is not going to look out for this. They don't care a whole lot about what we're going through as a people. And so we need to be able to control our own narrative. And the way we should do that, or can do that, and this is deeply rooted in my spirit, is that we have to educate men and understand their rightful place in the world, which is to be the priest, the protector, and the provider of our families, our cities, our communities, because it's a mandate from God. And the mandate was all the way from the beginning of time. And I'll say this and then I'm done. When Adam was persuaded by Eve to eat the forbidden fruit, and all of a sudden they realized shortly thereafter that they was naked, God said to Adam, "Adam, where are you?" He did not say, "Adam and Eve, where are you?" And the reason why he said, "Adam, where are you?" is because he gave the original instruction to Adam, not to Eve. He gave it to Adam. So Adam should have stood his ground, although it was his wife. He should have stood his ground and not eaten that forbidden fruit. And so he broke the covenant in terms of being the priest, the provider, and the protector of his family.
All right. I appreciate that, sir. And before I get to the ladies, I want to hear something from some of the men first. Brother Dr. McKenzie, can you unmute yourself, sir? Dr. McKenzie.
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. Look, and I know you belong to, I think it's Black Professional Men.
Yes.
And, and a group called Reman.
Correct.
And,
yes, sir.
And a few other things, you know, Brothers Help is something I think you're involved with. But look, I want to ask you the reason. Why are you involved with these type of organizations?
Well, it stems from a couple of different reasons for me. One, I wanted to be able to be a part of us as men doing our part, and as the brother was saying, and showing other men what true manhood is. I'm a firm believer that nowadays there's been a miseducation of manhood. I grew up with my dad, but without my dad. Him and my mom have been divorced since I was 10, but he still played an active part in my life. And I didn't want other brothers who who did not have their father in their lives to grow up like I did with not having him in the household with me, because it was something that was important to me. And so it was a part of me that was missing. And it, as much as he was in my life, there was still a part that was missing because I didn't have that, especially through my young adult years, didn't have that that father that I could go to and talk to him about man issues, man, those things that only a father could understand. Mom was there. She loved me. But one thing she always told me, she said, I love you. I'm your mother, but I can't teach you how to be a man. She understood that. And she placed around me positive male figures. And that's where I got that from, making sure that I had positive male figures around me. But now in turn, with me learning that, and having that, wanting to be one of those positive male figures that are around the next generation, because it's every generation's responsibility to make it better for the next generation, and that's specifically for us as men. It's our responsibility to make it better for the next generation of young men, and we've dropped the ball. We dropped the ball because we can look out here every single day and we see what's going on. And it's a constant task for us to be able to get the young brothers to understand what this manhood journey is that they're on. And so many of them don't even understand it. They don't know where to go. They don't know they don't know the answers. And just like me, I didn't have answers when I was that age either. But I'm able to, because of what I've learned, and being a part of these organizations, to say, hey, young brother, here's what you have, the advantage of being able to have that I didn't have at that age. And you can be further ahead because you have access to the knowledge. And most of us, let's think about it, when we were younger, when we were in our 20s and our 30s, we were knuckleheads and we thought we knew everything that was, and it wasn't much that the older men, old head, y'all don't know what y'all talking about. That's what we said to them. And now in turn, they're telling us the very same thing. But we like, young fella, just hear us. Hear us and understand, we know a thing or few. We know a thing or two because we've been in places that have had to teach us a thing or two. So you might want to listen a little bit, so that you don't have to bump your head against the wall like I did, or like other brothers who are out, who are our age and older, have gone through that experience. So that's why I'm a part of these organizations, because of just the passion that I have for us as black men, and wanting to see us and knowing that we can be and do so much more than what we are now. And that's something that I'm going to, I hold, and I'm going to keep holding and keep doing until I take my last breath, because I love us so much as black as black people, and specifically as black men.
I appreciate that. I really do. Now, ladies, I'm going to get to you because there's some very important questions I'm going to ask the ladies on here. But before I do that, Reverend Fred Shaw, can you unmute yourself, sir?
Okay. Am I there?
Yes, sir. I hear you loud and clear. Let me just say this about this brother. Now, he told me, like most men didn't have this, he was around powerful black men in his, coming up. Now, I want you to share that with us, Reverend Shaw, and how it had an impact on your life.
Well, I grew up with what people call the man's man. And this was a man who was strong. He taught me you defend your family at all costs. You protect your sisters if you got to fight to the death. He was a real man. Very little punishment. I think I got 4 spankings from him in my whole life. And he was my best friend. And we was, he tolerated me and stuff. And I wish that everybody could have had that. Because let me tell you a secret. One day, we did a home invasion, and we was going to kill a guy who threatened to kill one of my friends. And we walked into the house, and we realized that if we killed him, we had to kill his his girlfriend and kill her mother because you couldn't leave nobody alive. And something, everybody was waiting on me to give the signal. And for something in me, be it God, be it intuition, be whatever we want to call it, from where you stand in life, I could not make that call to kill these people. 2 weeks later, my mother and father took me to dinner, and they told me how they were so proud of me that I didn't get involved in a lot of things, but I was involved in things that they didn't know about. This was the kicker. I said to myself, and I thanked God at that moment. So not only was it a life lesson, but it was a spiritual lesson. And I thank God that I did not make that call and ruin everything that my parents had in their mind about me, the level that they regarded me, the things that they prophesied over me, what they knew I could do. This is the same lady when they killed Martin Luther King was sitting at the dinner table crying, and my father was there, and I walked in. I didn't know. I think I was 13. I said, what's going on? You know, I thought my grandmother died or something like that. And my father said, they killed Martin Luther King. And I said, well, it's going to be all right. She said, well, she's not crying for you. I mean, him. She's crying for you. She know where you're going to end up in life. These were the type of parents that I had. So when I realized all this flashed on me in a moment, and I realized that I had almost thrown my life away in that one moment, and I had a beautiful, perfect mother. I had a father that was a man's man and my best friend who I held him as a hero, and I still almost messed up my life. And I said to myself, if I almost messed up my life, with all of these advantages, we weren't poor. My dad was a businessman. We weren't poor. I went to private school in high school and stuff and played ball. But if I could almost throw my life away, what about the people who didn't have a father like me? What about the people who didn't have a mother like me? What about the people that did not grow up in a family of black nationalists and was supposed to understand what the mission was about at the young age? What about those kids? And that's why I've spent the rest of my life in California for the NAACP. I'm on the California-Hawaii State Conference Children Task Force. I defend children. If you notice, most of the time when I talk about these psychiatric drugs, I'm talking about the effects that it have on kids. Because I promise God for giving me that favor, for not allowing me to make that mistake. I promised mentally to my parents, who are no longer here, that, you know, because of who they were, I would always work to save the lives of young men and stand by them and mentor them and do all that. That's why I opened up probation homes for boys years ago, residential 24-hour care facilities for probation kids. So, you know, it means everything for a father to be there. I had a, and I'm going to wrap it up, but I had a, I was at the ceasefire meeting we had here, the anti-gang and all that. And I was talking about, you know, what's wrong is we don't have fathers in the home. And the topic was human trafficking. And I told them, this is based on what my dad had told them they hadn't made a pimp that could put mine in the street. I don't care how bad he was, because I would walk up and gun him down on the street and stand there and wait for the police to come and have to threaten a young man who was being a policeman when he threatened my daughter. I told him I would walk up in Main Central Jail and gun him down and just let them arrest me from there. This is what we're missing in men. You ain't got to be violent, but you better be willing to be to protect your family, and your sons will grow up like you. My sons ain't been to jail. They don't use drugs, at least a lot of drugs. You never will what they done. They've never been to jail, none of that stuff. But Nobody messed up. One of them even went into the Nation of Islam, even though I'm a Christian minister. The other one is doing very well, and he was a martial artist. We have to teach our sons, and we got to teach them right. And that means we got to have the right mindset. We got to know what's right and wrong. We can't yield to whatever and stuff. We got to make sure our pants ain't sagging. We got to make sure we not call a bitch and a whore. I'm sorry, ladies. And quit playing with it. And every man need to be that example. And our sisters are going to have to start picking better, because just because little Ricky everything in your block don't mean he's everything on the next block. So you got to make sure that you're picking the right men to sit over your children so that they can have the right examples in their life. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Amen.
What happened? Did I get lost? I can keep talking now.
No, we can hear you. Something has stopped off and over. Can you hear us?
I can hear all you guys, yeah.
Okay, we don't know what happened. Maybe David.
No, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, David.
I was just running my mouth. But in any case, this is what I was saying. The reason I did this was because I painted a picture of men not doing things. Men who were not standing up this past Saturday. I was just mentioning that. But I just wanted to be fair to our brothers that there are men out there who are taking a stand, who are standing in the gap. You know, like you heard one brother say, willing to die for his family. You know, those are the type of men that, you know, I think God intended us all men to be. To protect it, like my brother Marvin Underwood, Reverend Marvin Underwood said, the protector, provider, and the spiritual leader. And so, ladies, I'm great to come to you now. And I want you to be real bold. I want you to be real, real honest about the state of men. From, you know, every man is not the same. But all of you have opinions, which we all do. And sometimes, you see, Marilyn Mosby stood up in front of men and spoke her truth from her perspective. It was gut-wrenching to me. Because what's the main thing she was saying, not only did her husband abandon her, all the ministers used to be around abandon her, her friends who were supposed to be her friends abandon her. And she said one powerful thing. She said, when I looked around one day and I saw men standing behind me that were supporting me, she said that made such a world of difference in her life. She says it gave her that extra strength to get through what she was just going through. And she now knows, she said, because of those men who stood up and stood with her, that now she's able to take even a stronger stand now, because she knows now that she's not by herself. And ladies, you know, I see things from the outside looking in, and we all can form opinions about this and that, but it's nothing like hearing it from the ladies themselves, how they feel about certain things, what they see about men from their perspective, and what from their perspective, what they think men should do to sustain, to hold on to their children, our children, to be better men, to be better husbands, fathers, protectors. And I like to start with Cheryl Ricks. You know, just an open conversation. You know, this is not men against women or anything like that, but we just try to speak truth, because the truth will make us all free. And sometimes it's like Marilyn, like I was just saying, because she spoke truth to us, you know, like I said, it did something to me and most every man in there, because we heard, we had our opinions, but then hearing it from her made a totally difference. Go ahead, Cheryl. I just want to hear from you, for, you know, far as men is concerned.
Hello, everyone.
if we look at our history as a people, when we was going to civil rights marches and we had segregation, you know, even though we didn't have some of the privileges that the white people had, we had each other as a community. And mm-hmm. when we had each other as a community, men were men, women were women, and the women did what God called women to do, and the men did what God called men to do. And a woman, even if a man what didn't have it together, there was a black woman that said, you know what, if you want me, you got to get yourself together. I got standards. My kids, when we raise them, we're going to put right stuff in them. And the caliber of women back then in those days had what a man needed so he could get the help meet that God called women to be to men. And even if men back there didn't have the support they had from the men they needed, there were women that came into their lives, whether it was their grandmother, their mother, or their girlfriend, or the wife they wanted. As a people, we didn't function like God intended men and women to function. There are things that God has put in a man that a woman needs. And there are things that God put in a woman that a man needs. And when we function in our roles as women and men that God created us to be, can do what's needed for the family, what we need as a community, what we need as a people. And there's so many things that happen along our journey. And I don't know about y'all, but I would say a lot of us, we was raised strict. You know, get your tail in this house. When the street lights come on, get in here. Ain't nothing out there in them streets you need to be out there for when the sun go down. And we had standards. We had morals. Even if the parents or everybody, even if they drank or they were doing whatever they was doing, they were still functionally alcoholic, taking care of their families, taking care of them kids, you know, supporting each other as husband and wife. And we, it was like there was a community back then where somebody saw you doing something and they would say, you know, Mom, we don't want to raise you that way. Get your tail in that house. And they could whip your butt and tell your parents that they whipped your butt and your parents will whip you again. It was community. A man knew what a man role was back then. A woman knew what a woman's role back then. Women were in the house. They weren't working outside the house. They was growing them children, being there to teach them children. Your man going out dealing with all that prejudice and being treated like a second class or not as a man because of what he had to deal with to get a job and take care of his family. He went through hell. But there was a woman in that house that said, baby, I'm here. You can put down your sword. You can lay your head on my breast. You can lay your head in my lap. Take a break, rest. Put your weapons down. It's a place where you can be. You home. You home. We ain't got a fight in here. Now when you look at the way the world is now, there's no home. There's no place that a man can raise, lay his head because the women are doing stuff that they didn't used to do. They didn't know their place. They didn't know who they were as a woman of God. They didn't know who God created them as a woman. And when I talk about the strictness that we went through as people back then, those times, you were strict because I'm not going to let you run out there as my daughter. This is what our parents was at. You're not going to have yourself out in the street acting like you ain't got no morals and you is a loose woman. No, you're going to do what you need to do, and you're going to have your butt in here. No, you're not going to wear your clothes, those clothes like them other girls doing. No, you're not going to be out here just going with any old boy. There was standards. And when next generation came up, my parents was too strict. I couldn't do anything. I could be strict on my kids like my parents was on me. And then here we go. I didn't have nothing. Every time you came to my house, I had to have hand-me-downs. I wasn't ready to be close from one place and going to the thrift store. I'm going to give my children any and everything they want. So the mothers,
They get out the house and they go work all these jobs, spend all these hours buying the kids all these things. TV is raising the kids. The children are raising each other. And that's what happens. So when women get back to a place in their life that God says they should be, we should be, when women understand that you have got to be healed and whole, when a man understands that he's got to be healed and whole, all the trauma and the stuff we've been through, the abuse, the self-inflicted attack, you know, all the stuff we go through as a people, if we would get some healing and restoration, if we would come into a place of community and where we can just say, you know what, I can't take it. It's too many of us in isolation trying to maneuver through the challenges and the road of life. It's too many of us trying to do it on our own. We need community. I promote sister circle, brother circle, boy circle, girl circle. When we come together as women and we talk about what's going on in our journey of womanhood, when we can stop talking about, you know, I'm going to look pretty, I'm going to get my hair did, my nails done, get my manicure, I'm going to buy all these designer clothes, so that's what's going to make me somebody. No. When a woman actually becomes who God says she is, and she gets her healing and restoration, and she understands that in spite of whatever she's been through or whatever's been done to her, God has still got a perfect plan for her, and he needs her. He has things that he's called her to do. That's why he created her. And the same is true for men. Even though we get beat down, even though we get left over, even though we're the best in whatever area we tend to go in, we still got to recognize who God says we all are. And we got to get in community again. The men got to help the men. The men got to help the boys. The women got to help the women. The women got to help the girls. And once everybody's in place where they need to be, then they will take it down. I'm a single woman. I have been divorced and widowed from the same man. But I still desire to be married because I think I can help more men being a single woman, black single woman, than I can just trying to be there for one. So I say to all my brothers, if you need a queen, king, to speak life into you, a place where you can come and just be real and just talk about whatever you need to talk about without judgment, somebody, a woman that can see you as the king that God created you to be, call me up. I don't care what you want to talk about. Any subject is fair game. You can talk and be as explicit as you want to be. You can be as truthful as you want to be. If you need to use a customer to explain yourself, you can call this sister up. Because that's what we need to be. We need a place where we can talk. Even in the Word of God, it says, let us share our sins one with another. If you don't have a place to talk about all the stuff that's stressing you, all the things that's haunting you, then you're never going to get free so we can be what we need to be to each other as men and women, let alone what we need to be to our kids and our communities. So I said, as when women start walking in the roles that women is called, God has called women to be, and men start walking the roles that God has called men to be, and we function as a unity, as a man and a woman, doing what we need designed to do together, things will change. And it don't need to go from the far out down. It's from the ground up. Wherever we go, let us represent. Wherever places we have able to impact, let us make the impact. We're talking about what young people are doing, what somebody needs to do. If we would do the part that we can do wherever we are or wherever God takes us, then don't look for somebody else. If it's not you, then who? If it's not now, then when? I want to teach one of us to do what we need to do. That's all
right.
I got.
Okay, all right. Appreciate that. And you know, brothers and sisters, you know, sometimes we say we set the meeting, let's talk about it. We have to be about it. But you know, everything, you know, we have to communicate with one another.
And if you don't know, that's why I say you need to ask somebody sometimes. And sometimes misunderstanding cause so many conflicts. Misunderstanding, is exactly what it says. Misunderstanding. People have got tilt over misunderstandings because we lack the communication. And Sister Trudy, can you unmute yourself, please? How you
Good
doing?
Good evening. Good,
you
and you all good.
Yeah, I'm doing great. But let me ask you a personal question. If you don't have to answer if you don't want to. I want you to, if it's in your heart to do so, because I'm gonna ask this question. As a woman, as a young woman, just as a woman in general, when it relates to men in the role that you think men should be in, and what you actually have seen or what you have witnessed in your own life, if you had a wish list, what would it be for men? And if not, from your perspective, what do you think men should do to be a better father, husband, or just a better man in the community? I know that's kind of general, but, I'm just trying to get to a point where we have a better understanding of what our ladies are going through, what their expectations are, and if as men, can we meet those expectations but we have to communicate with one another. Can you share a little bit about that, please?
Absolutely. Mother, grandmother, married more than once, divorced more than once, single parent, three kids of my own, and it's a life lesson. I mean, I have seen it all, been through it all, and thank God because he chose me. If he didn't, I wouldn't be here. But I need to piggyback off of Cheryl's comments. We need to take it all the way back, and Mr. Underwood's comments. We need to take it all the way back to the garden. First of all, a woman don't find a man. A man finds a woman. That's how we become out of order, and I was that person. I saw somebody I like. I gave them my phone number and blah, blah, blah. And every relationship turned out to be horrible. It just did not work because I was out of order. I grew up in the age where women can be all that, two bags of chips. We can be the man. We can raise the kids. You can't do it all by yourself. God made Adam from the earth, and he made woman out of Adam. We are one flesh. We are supposed to follow the order, and the whole family is out of order. And the mission is to keep the man out of the household. So we tearing the kids up because we're working, we're doing all of this stuff, and nobody is with the kids. The TV, the tablets, the computers, all of that raises our children. And you don't even know who lives in your house. Because they got one name, their government issued name, and then they got some name out on the street and living a double life. Our black men, I always said my love belongs to a black man. I had a very good father. He was a very good role model when you start going back and talking about we had a two-parent household. My mother did not work for a long time. So she was with us. She cooked for us. She got us ready for school. She was home when we got home. Most of us, our kids are at the daycare, after school program. Ain't nobody there. They eat noodles and TV dinners. I had parents that were really parents, and I'm fortunate. But you can only bless the child that has his own. So once I got out there, I tore up my own life. I can raise my hand and say a lot of this is based off decision. You make the wrong decision, you reap the consequence.
I just want to say that the man is the head, the woman is sex. Well, God is the head, the man, the woman, and then the children. And until we do get back to that community in your household, how many people are in the same house and they don't eat together? They text each other. They in the next room texting you. You don't sit down. You don't say grace. You don't, the kids aren't saying their prayers before they go to bed. You're right, Ms. Ricks. We had morals. We had standards. I think I wore pantyhose until I was probably in my 40s. We wore girdles and everything. We had it tight. You didn't show anything. Now everything goes. You got teenagers looking like grown women. So they get treated like grown women. They out in the street. But everything that everybody has said is very important. And we do need to mentor our men to get them back in the household. We do need to mentor our women so they know their place in the household. And I'm not saying be a doormat, but there is an order, and if you understand that order, you would not dare go against it. That's my two cents.
I appreciate that. I see Kim or Cynthia had the hand raised. Can you unmute yourself, please?
Hey, Jumbo, good evening.
Good evening. Yes, how you doing, Cynthia?
Fine. Kim may want to speak. I'm starting off. I do agree with quite a bit of what everyone else has said. Definitely have to start in the beginning with men and women being who they're, who God ordained them to be. But however, you asked us about a wish list for husbands and for the men in our lives and for men in general. And I think that our Black men have to take seriously how they impact our lives. They are alcoholics. And when the wife, you know, is trying to get them to take programs to or do what they need to do to get out of that system, to respect that wife, allow the wife to be a wife. You got to let the wives, when wives, some people, men say when the wives nag them. But when women, when a woman loves a man, she don't want to see him fumbling and stumbling and all these things happening to him. So the only thing that she would know to do would be to go to friends and family, ask for help, or ask, you know, ask him, you know, to go to a program. They got all kinds of programs out here. So I think that men have to take that, how they appear to us and how we're interacting with them. If they are on, if they're alcoholism, if they are a heavy marijuana smoker and their thought process is out of order, that's a lot for us as women to have to process. Also take earning an income seriously. It takes X amount of dollars to pay your rent. It takes X amount of dollars to take care of your gas and electricity. It takes X amount of dollars to pay your phone bill. And when women end up having to cover all these different expenses, we know we most of them want to be home with their children. But you can't be home with your children if your other half is not actually providing for you. Everybody keeps saying they're going to be a provider, but they have to know, what does it really mean to be a provider? Are you saying you want to be a provider? Are you looking at the definition? Like going to school, you take a test. Back in the day, y'all all talk about how good the school system was. For us coming still, we're in our 50s and 60s. We knew we had to look up the definition of a word. You had to know how to spell it. You know how to define it. And you had to put it in a sentence. The definition of a provider is that you take care of those needs. And if you're not taking care of the needs, then you're not being a provider. So that knocks the equation off. Like the other, everyone else is saying some of the same things. Now the equation is out of balance. Let's reverse that. Let's say that the woman is home and supposed to be home with the children. If she's not home with the children, she's out getting her hair done and nails done and partying and stuff, then she's out of order. But if the wife is doing what she's supposed to do, she needs, that's what we need, the village. And I don't see the village. I don't know where the village is when you ask them these questions. You have a husband and a wife, and I have been that wife, and I have gone to people in the village, and the Kiswahili Kwanzaa village, and I've said, hey, I need help. And people looked at me and told me that was my personal, that's your personal problem, Sister Jahi. And I put my business out there, and I really don't care what anybody thinks.
I'm just telling you. I'm like Marilyn Mosby. I understand how she feels. You look to your right, all the men that you knew are gone. You look to your left, all the women that you know are gone. And everybody's telling you, well, I'm going to pray for you, or you're going to be okay, you know, or I hope you'll be okay. Thank God the one cousin that I didn't even know that well opened up her doors for me. And what I'm saying to you, that's not let that happen to Marilyn Mosby. We're on this call talking all this yak. All of us got $25 or $50 to put. She got a Zelle account that Bill put out there. Bill put it out there. And I was on the, I met Marilyn Mosby for the first time. Me and Kim, you gave us those tickets for the Universal Circus. You gave us those tickets, David. And they had a reception. And me and Kim saw Marilyn Mosby. I think that was the first time we started charging us about something. And we walked over to her. You know, we're kind of shy. Y'all might not think we're shy, but we all, we go to meet people. I said, let's go over and meet her, because let's meet her. Let's give her, do a prayer with her. And me and Kim sat right down there, as some other people talked to her, and she gave us her time. And we talked to her for as long as she had. You know, we told her, you know, we'll pray everything go well with her. And Kim prayed with her. Then I didn't see anything anymore. I wasn't involved in anything anymore. Bill put the thing out for us to go on that bus trip, that bus ride, to support that young woman, our sister. And I said, Kim, I took off from work.
Amen.
And I went there. And Kim took off from her business that we're doing. And we got on that bus with people. We didn't know anybody on the bus except one person, but Bill. I knew one other lady. And we went there. And we were able to give her a hug and tell her, look, we are here. We are sisters. I don't really know Marilyn Mosby really at all. I was living in North Carolina most of the time when she was in office. But she is still my sister in pain. And we got to be there for her. So that's what we got to do. What I want to say to everybody is we have to take the action. I know everybody's busy. I get that. But right now, if you got a men's group or women's group, this woman needs her money. She needs money, not her money. She needs money to sustain herself, to be taken care of so that she can keep her mental stability there. She does need to see us. We need to be able to tell people, yes, I am here to help you, like Trudy said, and Trudy working on some stuff with us now, that we actually have to take action. Action, not meetings, not meetings, people. I'm talking about action. Get some money, open up your daggone door, don't get somebody no old food and clothes that's all worn out, food, the cans all bent up. No. And call, and y'all friends of different people that do you know who I know, call the brother up. Give the brother he loved, the love that he needs, and have these people be accountable. We have to be accountable. I hold my sister hold me accountable. I hold my daughter accountable. My daughter hold me accountable. My daughter's in a wheelchair. I got to make sure things going to happen for her. She's 44 years old. I got to make sure that when I leave this earth, I've left something for my daughter because she is in a wheelchair. I can't imagine I'm going to leave something. I can't ignore it. It's got to be done. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Yeah, I would like to say something.
Yes, please, right in.
Maybe give me a second. This is a very emotional thing, and that's for the young lady. First, when she got in office, when I saw her running, I was tired. I said, go here. She's a young lady. Same as Sunshine. Doing her thing. Proud. She has to go to New Summit Baptist Church. And you talking about the church and stuff. So I'm pissed off because I'm getting the church to be there for you. I don't care how much money you get from. I think somebody mentioned on the call last week. I don't care if you get, what is it, 501C. You got to stand on the ground, stand on the word of God. Don't let nothing separate you from doing what you're supposed to do. I'm mad. If she knew something about the church and not stepping up for her and not being there for her, having all these politics at the church, it's something where I got a problem with that. They ain't taking it for us either. And I'm sick and tired of years. I'm 57 years old. Give me a second. Mm-hmm. I'm 58, actually. 58 years old. Five grace, eight new beginnings. Been on this earth. Since I was little, I'm going to go by something not important, but it's still important. You hear about schools, same school system bad. Now, I'm 58 years old, the same situation in school system. Now we deal with the black family. The same old stuff over and over again. We got to stand up together. We got to do this together. We got to do this and that. And then people talk about the civil rights movement. Okay, which come down, it doesn't stop. We got to keep on moving. Or we can't pick up a weapon. We don't want to do that. We might have to pick up a weapon for our freedom. We feel as though as black people, black men have been attacked. And then this is a problem they have. People say, well, you just go off to jail and you deal with it. Why are we talking about go here to jail? Why are we not fighting? No, you're not taking my sister to the jail. They may be all 100 or 200 or 1,000 people going to black the jail to prevent her from going into jail. We need to stand up. That means somebody die in the process, then we die for a good cause. I'm sick of talk. We can't pick up no freaking weapons. We don't be violent. We're not violent. We defend ourselves. God gave us right to defend ourselves. Just say, I'm born again, Holy Ghost, Spirit, testify. We did come by the blood of Jesus. God did not save you, not fight. In the Bible, he took down armies. And I'm sick of talk. Me and my sister, we attended my cousin's house. We are grateful we have stayed in our cousin's house. But if we didn't have my cousin, we would have been on the street. Everybody on the different situations, we dealing with talking to people, oh, we love you, we keep doing prayer. Did not step in. Our freaking brothers come in the house. We are sick of us. We come from a three-pronged home. But the breakdown, not when my father and mom was living. So when the breakdown happened, they are into a drug, but they drink and party, and we want to be in business and do different things. They see things different. They didn't step up. Why, when we move, we got to figure where we're going to move at, where to help at. So we're dealing with our brothers, we're dealing with brother-in-law, we're dealing with family, we're dealing with community. Where are the black men? So we had these conversations, and the thing go over and over again. We talk about the children in school, the same process. Then we go on the call, and some people don't want to hear. We can't talk about that. That's a conspiracy theory. Oh, no, that's too much. Not just at the time. That's not the right moment. It's always the right moment to talk about. It's the right moment. Every moment we talk about Jesus. And every time it's the right moment to talk about our safety. Because truly, we are a dangerous people on this earth. Because everybody want to take us out for some reason. Until we come together, seriously come together, then the only thing that's going to change. Now, this young lady, it's crying out for her. When I went down, I said, where's your family? I said, you know, we were so maybe she told them not to come. I mean, what her mother for? I don't know her mother for. I know she said, I didn't say something about her grandmother she was taking care of. So she out of her home. So where her grandmother staying? She got two little young ladies, little girls. So where she at? We got people on this call. People know people. They brag about all this affiliation. People build a home, own home. We're watching that in the home. It's just nobody we know. We're going to have somebody. Have people we know. The people, if you don't know them that well, in our own inner circle, then we can branch out and branch out and branch out and branch out and change our community. That's all I have to say in the name of Jesus.
Amen, amen, amen. Well, I'm glad that we are having this conversation because, you know, we're getting it from all angles. You can feel the passion. You can feel the pain. You can also feel the disgust as well. And like I said, we have to communicate. You see, you never know. That's why I said we are brothers and sisters keeping, because you never know. Some people right in your own midst are going through it. They're going through it in silence and crying. Now, I can sit up here and cry on your shoulders all day long. But, you know, that's yesterday. We have to start opening up. You see, you know, when we do this, you know, not only the communication, you know, we can, you know, get this stuff out of our system. But then, you know, especially in my case, you know, you have not because you ask not. You know, sometimes, you know, right in your midst, God has blessings all around you. But if you suffer in silence sometimes, and if you don't let people know sometimes that, you know, because people, you know, everybody busy going here and doing this and doing that. But sometimes you need to have a circle, a confidential circle that you can work with. And just like Cheryl mentioned earlier, you know, there's no shame in my game. And, you know, God has truly blessed me with many years, with many experiences in life. And sometimes we just talk to one another. Not only can I bless you, but you can bless me as well. We can help each other so that we can help ourselves. And so, but we had to open up this line of communication. Now, anybody, before I bring this thing to a conclusion, because there's going to be a call of action after this, after we have this call. See, this is not just to be talking about it. We're going to have to start doing something about it. Anybody else, you know, we just talking about men and women, how we can support one another. And there's all, like Sister Kim was saying, there's all types of attacks that's coming at us from our every angle. And unfortunately, we are so, I don't know if we call it shell shy or be immune. to this because, you know, a child get killed in our community, 2-3 years old. Oh, that's a shame. That's far as it goes. I mean, we just, you know, the stuff that's happening to us today is so commonplace now that we don't wax cold, as they say. You know, but it don't have to be that way. And if anybody else want to make a comment or have any concerns, you know, about this conversation, this is the time to do so. Anyone, unmute yourself.
Well, I just think if we would keep these communications going with each other, not just on a call that goes out to the world, but, you know, privately, one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three. You know, it's a lot of us on this call, but we're not connected. You know, it's kind of like when you go to church on Sunday. Oh, hey. And then you go home, you come back next Sunday or Wednesday night Bible study. There's nobody that you're connected with in the church, but everybody you see on Sunday. We have to take other believers and other people into our lives. So we have the community. So we have the support. So we have the help and the resources that we need. One of us have a lot. When we come together, we have more. We do better together than we do alone. So we just need to be exchanging numbers with each other. You know, and I'm serious. You ain't got to be just the man. If there's a woman on here that want to talk and want to share, want to collaborate, I'm available. I'm a single woman in the Lord. I'm here to help. I'm here to make a difference. I'm here to use my gift, talents, and ability and let the Lord use me. So you want to talk, you want to collaborate, you want to share some, you know, some insight, you want to partner up. We got some suggestions that we can come together to do. But like I said, if each one of us, wherever we are, whether it's in our homes, in our churches, in our community, in the supermarket, at the barbershop, at the hair salon, wherever we are, make an impact. If we see somebody and they don't seem to be represented well and they're not together, reach out to that person. Make yourself available. But, you know, people are lost. If people didn't come to us when we were coming along and help steer us in the right direction, we wouldn't be where we are today. We have to help be there for other people to steer them in the right direction. Give them the kind of support that people gave us so that they can get to as far as where we are, if not further.
Amen, amen. Vernon, I think I heard you try to say something too. Vernon.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. This is very, very informative, you know, just this discussion. I think it took us to a place where we see what has to be done, you know, and I'm very touched about, you know, all of the topics that was talked about, you know, and, you know, just have to get out and do more. You know, it's so important because this is our community. This is us. You know, like a lot of you said, what if the roles was reversed? And we have to get other people to see that. We're not just, you know, like a lot of you, we're just not individuals, but we're a collective, you know. Even sometimes I can even feel like, okay, when I'm by myself, you know, I feel as though, okay, I'm missing a connection somewhere. I need to, you know, be a part of something or call somebody, you know, that feeling is always there, you know. And I think a lot of it has been, you know, infiltrated on us. You know, we have to become wiser and smarter about what happens in our community and what happens to us as a whole and as individuals, and not let the enemy separate us, you know. And it is important, you know, it's important for us to stay connected. You know, we have to get other people to see that. Just don't be by yourself. It's a reason, you know, to have a community, to have a village. It's a reason. It's resources, it's help, it's so many different things. And, you know, like some said, you know, we have to not just have a lot of meetings, but we got to actually get out our houses, you know, whatever time you can, and just be a help, you know, even if it's just, you know, something where you just get out and help. Anytime that you have some time, get out, go next door, knock on your neighbor's door. Go when you're in a grocery store, pick up some food for somebody else. Just do different things whenever you can. And that's all I have to say.
Well, you said a lot, bro. I appreciate that.
Bro.
And, yes, sir. Come on in, bro.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate the discussion. It's very important. But I also want to remind us that we're just 3 years removed from the biggest pandemic in our lifetime. And we are transitioning into a new world whereby your kids, if they have a phone or iPad, they think they're your equals. You know, so a lot of things to contend with, a lot of stress still. But at the end of the day, this is what Black folks do best. We survive, we're resilient, and we believe in each other and we count on each other. So one of the things I remember, I haven't spent a lot of time in Baltimore, but there's a brother in Baltimore named Michael Graham. It's with the 100 Black Men. I used to be with that organization. You probably know Michael.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
But, you know, I met a bunch of brothers all over the country, you know, at the conventions, and there are so many of them out there doing great things in terms of just dealing with the young men, not necessarily the young women, but they're still giving scholarships to both. And 100 Black Women are another organization. But I think collectively, yeah, we got to get a little bit more grassroots, and I agree with Cheryl and Trudy and Kim and the others. We have to acknowledge each other and stand in our gaps, but at the same time, we in a world that's out of order. So platform like this, Brother David, is just tremendous at this particular time in my life to be able to come on here and listen and share with you all. That is a big deal because I tell you, 1996, when the Telecom Act passed, I never foresaw anything like a podcast. You know, we still talk about cell phones, right?
Yeah. Yep.
T-phones and all of that stuff. So, yeah, we're here, but I appreciate you, brother, and everybody that's contributing.
I appreciate you, too, because you bring so much to the table, and as all of you do. And let me say this to everyone. You know, I said we need to communicate, but we have to start taking action. And that's why I was led to do this, because all of you have pieces to the puzzle. I mentioned in the beginning, there's so many men groups, but they doing their thing. They each one is doing this thing. I believe Brother Underwood and I, and I've been talking to quite a few people. Even after the breakfast, we had different men groups there. But, you know, there's never been truly an attempt that I'm aware of. Because I would have been aware of it, because all the different men groups that I'm in, is that nobody, to my knowledge, had tried to bring all of these brothers together. Even if it was for a seminar, workshop, brothers coming together, something like that. You know, two or three of them did it, you know, with each other. But there's never been and the same thing on the women's side. We got so many different women groups. And they're doing wonderful work independently. But sometimes we need collectively come together. Support one another. You see what's about to take place, what's going to take place. You know, I said everybody has to do their part. I came down on this little elevator. There's only two stories to this thing on past Saturday at this recreation center. And one of the guys helped leading the charge with Marilyn Moses is a gentleman who's one of our founding members in Black Men Unified Black Men. His name is Michael Eugene Johnson. And he was saying, yeah, we men got to do something. And I said, man, maybe we need to have a coffee, pull all these brothers together, you know, just that. And he said, it might be a difficult task. But, you know, I come to learn. This is just a David Murphy thing. You know, sometimes when you ask other people to do things sometimes and make suggestions to other people, sometimes it may be just for you to do it. And, you know, and I'm a blessed man because over the years I've met many organizations doing great and wonderful things. And I'm going to make an attempt to do such that, especially with Brother Marvin Underwood. especially with Minister Fred Shaw and Dr. McKenzie. And I'm going to work with our sisters, Cheryl. We have so many sisters doing these great and wonderful things. And I have some connection to them. And there will be many discussions. You know, it might even one day be something that we may all come together one day and convention type stuff. You know, you never know when a seed is planted, how God's going to take place. But I do know one thing. And just on this call right here. Now, I do know this. Most of you on here, I had private conversations with. And you know that, you know, I don't mind sharing my story because, see, God has brought me this far. And I'd have been through many ups and downs. Sometimes most of it was self-inflicted. Even to this, up to this day, self-inflicted because I get in my own way sometimes. And, but I do know this. God is in the midst of us. And I know he's covering me. And I know he empowered everybody on here to do what we have already done. And, yes, I do know this. The majority of the people on here is going through it independently. I mean, individually. I mean, most of y'all are having some difficult times. But you don't have to do it by yourself. Because if each one of us brings something to the table, everybody can feast on it. And at least I'm going to make an attempt. Brother Marvin and I is already making plans to do a podcast for men. And we're going to invite all of these different groups of men and stuff to come on. Let's have some serious conversations. That's publicly. But then there's going to be some private conversations. Something you just can't say open sometimes. It's going to be one-on-one, like Cheryl said. Sometimes, you know, you can't share all your information with the world. Sometimes you need to find somebody that you can have a little bit of confidence in and have those one-on-one conversations. And I had many in my life, and that's what sustained me. Because I do know I'm not by myself in this walk of life. And I do know I've seen some battle-tested people. And I'm going to say this about the majority of you on here. You are battle-tested. Y'all have been through it. Like you said, y'all have been there and done that. And you still standing. And that's for a reason. We have all known people that's gone from us, family members, friends, and parents, everything else. And we're still standing. My brother Fred Shaw said all the things, if it had not been for his parents, the things that he would have done or could have done. But God sustained it. He was carrying us back then. He's carrying us now. There's some serious stuff going on in our community, especially having to black people. And it's escalating from all different, the medical field, our ministries, and everything else is under attack. We got people taking crumbs off the table and selling their souls, selling us out. I mean, so easily. And if we, those of us who are serious about our own well-being, those of us serious about our own community, those are serious about our black people, which you are, we can't and we have to make a difference. But we can't do this by ourselves. We can't do this being shy and withdrawn. This is not a drill, I like to say. This is true warfare. This is serious. This is life and death. Brother Shaw said something, man, that is so powerful. And it spoke about it in the Bible. If you're not willing to die for something, to stand or die for something, life ain't really worth living. If you're not willing to take a stand for your own children, your own community, your own family, your own sisters, then why are you here? See, you know, from this day forward, I know a lot of you have ideas and this, that, but somebody keeps saying we need to talk to one another. See, I'm going to just give you an example how God works in our lives. I keep mentioning Brother Underwood because I've been knowing this brother, you know, for many years, for such a time as this. 50, 60 years, he and I go back, even longer than that. And God, after all that stuff he's been through, all that stuff I've been through, here we come full circle. And he started talking about these men, and that's been on my heart for a long time. And he has the idea what he wants to do, but guess what? God has blessed me with the tools to assist him in. That's like I keep saying, I'm a servant of servants. That's what I do best. And with each and every one of you. But guess what? My sisters out there, there's so many powerful women out there. It's no excuse for my daughters and my daughters' daughters to go through what they have to go through, especially what God has given to you, Cynthia, Kim, Dr. YT, Trudy, Cheryl, and everybody else on this line. Powerful sisters. Know what they're talking about. Had lived the life in many different ways, but still standing. So there's no, like I said, no more excuses for us. But we have to start talking to one another. And you will be here because there are going to be some initiatives going on, but we need to open up this line of communication, collaborations, and all of this need to take place. And let's get it done because, like I said, there's people dying. There's people who need your service. God has not brought you this far. He's not giving you those skills and talents to use on yourself. It's time to escalate. And, yes, we got to go through our situation, but guess what happens when we do this? You know, God is so powerful. You know, when you give, it's a known fact. It's a spiritual fact. That's also a natural fact. You give and you shall be seen. The more you give, the more you're going to be blessed with. Because you're going to know people that's standing in the gap with you. That's going to allow them to, you'll never feel like Marilyn Monroe. You never feel like Cynthia. You'll never feel like Cheryl and Brother Underwood has felt, even especially David Murphy. Couldn't get no lower than I could, that I've been, from my perspective. But I do know one thing. God is able and God can change your life. And if he can do that for me, guess what? He can do it for you, especially those who are waiting on us. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, you know we're going to be on here tomorrow night at 7:30. And we're going to have a guest speaker. I can't think of the person right now. Mr. Murphy, are you still on the line? Yeah, I see him.
I'm on the line, but I don't have any information, David.
Okay, good. All right, sir. But we'll be on tomorrow night, 7:30. Please, if you can get on. See, this is what I can say. We have to show up because you never know what's going to take place, who you're going to meet, who may need your service. You may need their service. But the main thing is you have to show up. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you all so much. Those of you who are on Facebook Live, those of you on Blog Talk Radio, and those of you who are in on the Zoom call, you know, I appreciate you. You know, like I said, we have to have these type of conversations, but we don't have to just talk about it. We have to be about it. We have to make changes ourselves. And it starts with you, that man in the mirror. Can't point your finger at nobody else. Start with you first. And I guarantee you, if you start with you, you're going to find somebody that's doing the same thing as you are, reaching out just as much as you are. And when you two come together to make the load that much easier, that much lighter. And but again, it's going to happen. We got Brother Fred Shaw, and I'm going to give it to you, brother, because you got such a powerful ministry. And the first thing we all know is that we have to have a different mindset. We have to change our mindset, and we cannot medicate ourselves to make these type of change. You know, God put natural stuff in us to make, you know, just change your mindset. And you know, we can start some seminars, workshops, and all sorts of things that can take place. We have the power to do that. We have the technology to do it. You don't have to spend a whole lot of money to do it. All we have to do is collaborate. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you tomorrow night. We'll be back on here next Monday. And if you want to be a special guest on Monday night, it's Women History Month, especially you ladies. We really want to highlight you every day, but especially we want to highlight you during this particular month. But at the same time, because we want to know about your issues, because men want to know how we can deal better with you, how we can protect you, how we can stand with you. And if you don't let us know, we don't know sometimes. You know, we've been beat up so bad sometimes and misguided. And all the brothers know how we came up. You know, you don't pull the cry. We don't pull the half feelings. We don't pull the half nothing. You know, we supposed to man up. And we babies and children ourselves. But, you know, that's the kind of way it is. We starting off the block wrong. But, you know, but we can right those wrongs and with the wisdom that God has given us now. And so hopefully we will. I'm available, and things are happening. Things will continue to happen, and we have to make them happen. With that being said, I'm going to bid you all good night and see you tomorrow night and see you next Monday. My phone number is 443-455-2373. You can call me. You know you can. So let's talk. Let's reason together. I'm going to say good night to you all. Take care.
Good night, all.
Hey, good night, everyone.